right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Susnow.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Susnow. You're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show. Every week I invite somebody who has something to say, something to offer us, somebody who could inspire us, inspire new possibilities in our lives, possibilities about perhaps things that we put on hold, we gave up on, or possibility just in terms of a way of seeing the world in a way that's more empowering. So, with that in mind, I invited somebody today who's written several books about Buddhism, different aspects of Buddhism, and he wrote a book on happiness. He wrote a book called Finding the Blue Sky, and it's a mindful approach to choosing happiness here and now. So let me tell you a little bit about Joseph Emmett. He trained with the Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh at Plum Village in France, became a Dharma teacher, the doctorate of music from Boston University, and he's the author of Buddha's book, Asleep, and Buddha's book, of Stress Reduction, and Buddha's book, of Meditation. He's calling in. I know he's trying to get a hold of us, and I think he's here now. He talks a lot about positive psychology. How many of you are familiar with positive psychology? I mean, we kind of, the idea of traditional psychology is we kind of look at what's wrong, but positive psychology kind of flips the coin and looks at what's right about our life and how can we model that so that we start to have a different perspective. Are you there, Joseph?
Yes, I'm listening to you.
All right. Mm-hmm. So, tell me, welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show. Thanks
it's
for
nice
being on.
Nice to be here.
And I was just reading your books, all the books you've written, and a lot about Buddhism, and you've been a Buddhist teacher is that the right way? You've been a Buddhist teacher, would you say?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the right way. And by the way, what you said about positive psychology applies to some extent to the way Buddhism has sort of taken a turn in the last while. You know, Buddha also said, "I only teach suffering and how to end suffering," but not suffering is not quite the same as being happy. It's exactly what Martin Seligman says about his turn into positive psychology. Two remarkable Buddhist teachers.
Glad you brought that up, because I know whenever I've gone to a Buddhist center, they always talk about suffering. And it's kind of, in a way, turned me off to some extent. I mean, I'm into meditation and other spiritual things, but I love what you just said about not suffering is not the same as being happy.
Yes. Fortunately, my teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, is very much into going the extra mile toward happiness, and so is Dalai Lama, by the way. He has two books on happiness, and he talks about happiness a lot.
Mm-hmm. So what about that traditional Buddhist idea of the Buddha talking about, there's so much of the idea of suffering. Are you saying that So Thich Nhat Hanh is a Buddhist also, right? That's who you said he was? He's a Buddhist?
Yes, yes, yes. He's actually, he brings many traditions together. He brings the original, the stream of original Buddhism, as well as Zen Buddhism and another kind of Buddhism from the Far East called Pure Land Buddhism. He's those three streams together in his teaching.
And so, how do you reconcile positive psychology with some of the Buddhists? And I have a feeling that's what's in your book Finding the Blue Sky. I don't know why, but I just think that's in there, right? About how do you reconcile the Buddha's original teaching about with suffering, and non-attachment, and with positive psychology? How do you do that?
Well, the thing is, Buddhism is mostly about practice. It's not so much a philosophy, but it's a practices for daily living. And the practices that the Buddha prescribed and taught, such as mindfulness, concentration, and so on, diligence, they are absolutely necessary for what I promote in that book, Finding Happiness, Finding the Blue Sky. So we can use the tools that Buddha provided to go where we want. And in this book, I'm using those tools and giving the example of my own personal experience to go toward happiness.
Mm-hmm. So tell me more about your own personal experience about going toward happiness. What did you have an aha moment going on in your life and you just felt there's something missing?
Well, I didn't come from a happy home. I encountered happiness first in the home of my school buddy, my best friend. My home was like a monotone gray all the time, and his home was like, had all the colors of the rainbow. And later on, with my encounter with Thich Nhat Hanh, I learned the practice of mindfulness and the practice of happiness. He's a happy person. And
this is Thich Nhat Hanh.
Yes, Thich Nhat Hanh. Uh-huh. He's lives in France, and he's of Vietnamese origin, but he's been here since the Vietnam War. He was an advocate of peace and that conflict with the communist regime there.
So he's happy, and you met him. When did you meet him?
I met him about 24 years ago, and my journey is like, some people are born wealthy. They're born into wealthy families. And
yes.
Some other people become wealthy because they want to be wealthy and they work at it. So I belong to the second class so far as happiness is concerned. Unlike some other Buddhist traditions, which are emotionally neutral, Thich Nhat Hanh's Buddhist practice is emotionally very positive, and I was really lucky to encounter him, and this was exactly what I needed. And I found these teachings so useful for myself, and I decided to share it in this book.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you did. I used to have on my voicemail that happiness is a choice. Is that consistent with your teaching? What's in the book? Happiness is a choice that we make that decision over and over again. It's not dependent on our circumstances or what's going on. It's just a decision we make. Is that consistent with what's in the book?
Well, yes. Mindfulness has been defined as paying attention intentionally. And if you pay attention intentionally to what you have instead of what you're lacking, that creates contentment. If you pay attention intentionally to the good news instead of the bad news, you know, all over the media, all over the TV, that is going toward positivity. So this definition of mindfulness is paying attention intentionally is a good indication of the possibilities of mindfulness for promoting happiness.
But again, it goes back to when you're talking about paying attention. It's about what, but it's also about what you pay attention to. If you pay attention to, you know, to things that are that distress you, you're not going to be very happy.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you say to people that are, you know, that are think that people that are into this are a bunch of narcissists? I mean, they're people that are saying, oh, you just think about happiness, personal happiness. Aren't you being somewhat self-centered? What do you say to them?
Well, I know the kind of person you mean. I encountered a few of them in my. I see people privately, and once one person found it very difficult. He found it it was against his nature, like it felt artificial to him, and he struggled with it for months. I say to them, you have a lifelong habit of thinking one way. To change that habit requires a little bit of practice. You don't do it by simply wishing any more than you can speak Spanish by simply wanting to, or playing the guitar because you want to, you know. So one thing I recommend is practicing with mindfulness songs. I'm very big on mindfulness songs, and you'll find a lot of them on my website, mindfulnessmeditationcenter.org. Center is spelled T-R-E at the end, the Canadian way. And when you click on books, the first two books on the list, you have a couple of dozen mindfulness songs. And
well, give me an example of one. What's your favorite one?
Breathe. Just breathe, just breathe. Everything will be all right. Just breathe, just breathe. Everything will be fine. You know, when we're
keep going. Keep going.
Well,
put you on the spot. Like to sing.
You're going to sing with me?
Just breathe.
Everything will be all right. Just breathe. Everything will be fine. It repeats like a mantra.
Uh-huh.
The idea is when you're anxious, you're in your thoughts, like thoughts of future possible disasters. Just breathe brings you back into your body, gives you something else to concentrate on, something physical, sensations to concentrate on. And within a short space of 3 minutes, that song and other songs like that will change your state of mind. And I recommend, take 2 meditation breaks a day. And don't tell me you don't have 3 minutes sometime, somewhere. You know, you can do this in the bus, in the train, in the coffee shop. And listen to a song, better still, hum along with it, and see what it does to you, and talk to me after a month. Give it a little bit of time. I mean, even if you take, psychotropic drugs, they don't work overnight, you know. And people expect magical results from meditation. You have to give it a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that you're suggesting that these little meditation interludes are just 2-3 minutes and just singing a song, just breathe, something like that, will help you kind of get in a better state?
Well, there are many aspects to meditation and many ways of becoming more positive. Buddha said there were 84,000 Dharma doors,
wow.
84,000 ways of going about it. So on the website, there's about 35 songs. The way you put it, you know, just keep singing, just breathe, and everything will be fine. That's not exactly it either. With different songs, you explore different facets of positivity, of meditation, of wisdom, and so you come at it from different directions, and eventually it adds up, you know.
So let me interject here. I want to remind the listeners, you're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, and every week I have a guest who I feel is on the cutting edge, somebody who hopefully inspires us to think in a different way, think in a more positive way, to consider possibilities that perhaps we gave up on. Today's guest is Joseph Emmett, E-M-E-T. He wrote a new book called Finding the Blue Sky, A Mindful Approach to Choosing Happiness Here and Now. He's also the author of Buddha's Book of Sleep and Buddha's Book of Meditation. And he's been talking about songs that are like mantras, that are positive songs that help us get into a positive place. And and you said, Joseph, on your website, these songs are on your website?
They are practiced.
And you want to tell us that again, the website?
Mindfulness Meditation Center, mindfulnessmeditationcenter.org, and center is spelled C-E-N-T-R-E, Canadian way. The songs are part of the practice material for the songs, for the books, sorry. That's why they are under the books tab, and that's where you could find them, and they are for free download.
Wow. And there are 30, how many did you say, 37?
Well, there is a whole bunch, about 30 or more there, and there's some more on the web that other people have recorded, my songs, and there are references to them as well.
And you also, you speak to groups and organizations too? Is that part of what you do, or...? You see people that you talk to, have private clients, and
I see private clients. Then I have sessions that I organize myself. I have a ongoing session at the Montreal Jewish Hospital, which is one of the biggest hospitals here for cancer patients. I have a group that's actually going to meet in an hour.
Wow.
Right here on. Stress management. I have given last semester course on mindfulness and well-being. Then I see people individually. Then I give workshops for groups and organizations. There's a whole bunch of stuff that I've done previously on the website. I've spoken to teachers' conventions, to judges, to university classes, school of management, health sciences, number of places. Yes.
So, if you were going to, let's say, want to leave one thought behind with our listeners, what would that be? I always say to people, what was your takeaway? When I do a coaching session with someone, I always say, "What was the takeaway of our conversation today? What would you want the takeaway to be from what you teach from our conversation? I know we're just on the fringe of what you do and who you are, but what would be the if somebody got something from what you have to offer, what would that be?
Well,
what would you want it to be?
That would be a perseverance. One of the things that I do notice is that people do expect overnight results from meditation, and they get disappointed when they don't get that. But we're talking about changing habits, changing patterns of behavior and thinking, and that takes time. So be patient with your practice and continue. You see, if you say that you practiced for a month and you improved 1%,
right?
You know, some people will be disappointed with that, but 1% a month works out to 12% a year, and then over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It works out to a huge amount, let's say over 5 years. Well, it took Buddha 6 years to attain awakening. You see what I mean?
Yes.
Don't underestimate small incremental. This is how flowers grow. This is how trees grow. And this progress is an organic kind of progress. So be patient and persevere.
So would you say that people that are on a spiritual path, is that the important thing is to be patient, persevere, not give up, because sometimes it seems like nothing's happening. I've been on a spiritual path for many, many, many years.
So I know what I mean.
Yeah, I've been a meditator since the early 70s. I meditate every day.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'm glad I stuck with it, because I feel my life's pretty good. I feel pretty good. And I attribute to me the meditation is the core, because it just seems that when I meditate, things don't bother me as much. Stuff comes up, doesn't mean stuff isn't going to come up, but it doesn't really throw me for a loop. And a friend of mine said to me one time, I asked him, because I write a monthly newsletter, and I asked him, he responded, I said, how are you? How's it going? And he said, you know, I'm still taking the punches, but they don't hurt as much. And I think that's really what I feel. Meditation's kind of like a buffer, so that when the blows of life, the disappointment, the heartache, when they happen, it's going to hurt, but you're able to get on the other side easier, quicker. That's kind of, you know, what my experience is.
Now you're touching on Buddha's saying that I teach suffering and the end of suffering, because some level of suffering, stress, is built into life. I mean, we all get old, we all get sick, we all have relationship problems, and so on. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So could you tell me a little bit more about your last comment? You're saying now we're getting into the Buddha teaching here. When I was talking about, what I know sometimes when Buddha talks about suffering, I guess the confusion, I think, is some people say Buddha says life is suffering, as opposed to life contains suffering. And I think there's a huge difference in how you interpret that.
I have a beautiful statue of Kuan Yin, which is the female Buddha in the Chinese tradition.
Uh-huh.
She's standing on a dragon, looking radiant and at peace, and sprinkling drops of compassion on the world. That dragon is the challenges we all face. Buddha enumerated three main ones: old age, sickness, and death. Well, he was a monk. For those of us who are not,
can I have one more
relationship
one more
problem,
please,
add to it job stress, add to
two
it
more
commuting stress,
yeah,
add to it stress with recalcitrant children, you know, Buddha didn't did mention those. And
so he said again,
blissfully,
the three threats of it.
Side-skirted all that.
So what were their old, he said, were their old age, death,
sickness,
right?
And death.
Sickness and death and old age?
Yes, yes.
It
sounds a little bit like...
Yeah, I like that clarification that you added about, you know, that he was a monk and he didn't have, yeah. But he talked about the three main stressors.
Which are still there in every life.
Yeah, sure.
For sure.
Yeah, but I like
that. And loss, you know, and loss. You will, I mean, you and your beloved are one of you is going to die before the other one, and the one who's left behind is going to feel loss. There is no getting around it unless you have a suicide pact with your partner, and I hope you
right.
don't.
Yeah, yeah.
So loss
I know.
Is
and
inevitable.
Some people do, you know. Yeah.
I mean, it
is about that. How, you know, there are a number of people who've been together a long time, and when one partner dies, the other one dies shortly after. They just
very true. Very
some level
true,
of,
very
you
true.
Know, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it hits them hard.
Mm-hmm. So all your books are on the Buddha, though. Any other books other than the Buddha?
Well, the first book.
The Buddha's book is
Buddha's
Stress
book.
Reduction. And the.
Yeah.
So
the,
I
the
see here,
one,
the your book, the Buddha's book, Asleep, winner of the 2013 COVR Award for Book of the Year. What is the COVR Award?
It's given for self-help books. And.
Uh-huh.
And that book was translated into 10 languages.
Wow.
And so my publisher, Penguin, wanted to make a series of books with the same title. That's
wow.
how they all, the next books ended up by having that title, Buddha's Book of This, Buddha's Book of That. But they broke new ground with this book. The Blue Sky book has a different format. You know, I'm a fan of those crazy Zen stories. People call it crazy wisdom.
I love them.
yeah,
and you have one to start each chapter, right? A Zen story in this book?
Huh?
I thought I saw there's one in each starts each chapter, a Zen story.
Yes, each chapter starts with a story. Each has three sections. First, time for story, then time for reflection, a few thoughts about the same subject that the story uh-huh. starts with. And then time for practice, because practice is an important part of this. You know, just understanding things, the cognitive understanding is not enough. Someone described meditation as a way of reprogramming the unconscious, and that takes practice. So each chapter has those three sections. The practice section has maybe a poem, a song, a guided meditation, a meditation theme. They're all different for every chapter, and so I'm quite pleased with that format. It sort of is an inclusive kind of format.
I like it. Yeah, I have it right in front of me. Beautiful cover, and encourage our listeners to bookstore, and or you can get it in Amazon. Is that right?
Yeah.
Get the book on Amazon, or is it the local bookstores? So we're running out of time. Is the only thing. And
say that again.
We're running out of time. Our show is going to be over in a minute, and I want
okay.
to, you know, it goes by fast when you're having fun.
It
so,
really does.
Yeah, and I enjoyed our conversation, and I learned a few things, and I also like your reminder about that this path after the perseverance, how it just. You know, you're just going to have days when things are more difficult than others, and you just got to hang in there. And that's a great reminder, and encourage the listeners, pick up a copy of Joseph's book. It'd be a great guide for you in his other books. And again, Joseph, thank you for your quest, for being on a quest. I know people that are write books like myself, we're on a quest.
Yes,
it does take a lot of and it does take a lot of perseverance. You know,
it forces you to articulate what you believe and what you think.
I know.
Yeah.
It does. And it really does. And so again, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.